Have you been hitting the books and listening to lectures all day? It's time to relax, to unwind, and listen up. This is Brooke from Campus Chronicles, your go-to podcast for everything student life. No matter where you are in your academic journey, we have you covered. Think of us as a trusted mentor, friend, and confidant who always has your back. We'll be sharing inspiring stories, thought-provoking insights, and practical advice to help you succeed in and out of the classroom. So get ready to be inspired, enlightened, and entertained. Hello, hello, everyone. I am so excited to introduce you to this very fun-loving, effervescent guest that we have today. His name is Mike Tedasco. Mike, thank you for being here.
Brooke, thanks for having me. I'm excited about this.
Well, I'm excited to dive into this topic because I don't know about you, but I'm a little nervous of some of the technological advancements, particularly in AI. And I know that so many people feel the same way. But before we go there, give us a little insight into who you are. I want to know your background.
Yeah, absolutely. So Mike Tedasco, my background was originally in finance, and that's where I started my career doing finance and strategy stuff. I went to get an MBA, and then after that, started my own business, failed miserably at that. I was fortunate enough to get a job at PayPal after that, which put me on this different tech trajectory. I was in product for my first half there, working on some really cool stuff. And second half, I was running innovation for the company, which got to work on a lot of emerging and new types of technologies. I left PayPal about 2 years ago, and now I'm at San Diego State University as a visiting fellow in their AI center. And so I write and research and do all things AI.
Wow. Mike, I want to tell you something. Thank you for bringing up that entrepreneurship didn't work out for you. Because I think that sometimes there's this belief system that if you push hard or you hustle enough that entrepreneurship is going to work for you. That is not the case for all personality types. And I really applaud you for saying that because I'm an entrepreneur, but it's not right for everyone.
I mean, here's what I would say, Brooke. I did it for 2 years. And I was always entrepreneurial. Even as a kid, I would like collect baseball cards and sell them. So I always had that gene, so to speak, in me. I mean, I was always driven towards that. 2 years, I spent way more money than I made in those 2 years, as often entrepreneurs will do. And I will tell you, though, that it was probably the best 2 years educationally of my entire life that I had. I learned so much from that experience. I never would have got a job at PayPal if it weren't for me talking for 8 hours in an interview about all the ways I screwed up, all the things I did wrong. And like they were eating that up when I was actually applying for that job. So look, if anybody out there has the bug, it is a lot of long nights, a lot of gray hairs and stuff that you get from it. But I tell you, it is an amazing experience, even if you don't succeed.
It is, because business is your greatest self-development tool. And I tell that to people all the time. It's going to show you the things you love about yourself and the things that you maybe don't love or need a little bit of polishing, if you will.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, you learn so much about yourself. One of the things I'm like, I don't like to sell. And as an entrepreneur, it's actually really hard to not sell if you're the one doing that. But that's one of the things I learned about myself.
I love that. So I want to transition into this AI conversation. It can be very heavy. And I know that a lot of people are very intimidated, very nervous. They feel that AI came very quickly. You mentioned now that you write, you research, you do the whole nine yards with AI. Let's dive into that. Why do you think AI is so intimidating?
Why is it so intimidating? That's an interesting place to start. I think it's so intimidating because of the paradox of choice. So the paradox of choice is a term in psychology, and I think it was popularized around Stanford University out by me here. And the concept was when you have more jelly choices to choose at the supermarket, you are less likely to do anything with any of them. And so I think that's the first problem with AI is that literally there are infinite possibilities as to what you can do with the tools. And we as humans don't deal with infinity very well. And that's why when ChatGPT launched, it was very funny because I'd been playing with these tools for some time. I'm like, okay, what's the big deal here? Like, I didn't see it. I didn't get it because it was basically exactly the same as GPT-3.5 that they already had in this thing called Playground that OpenAI released. So I was like, I don't get it. they did a couple tweaks to the user interface and they kind of gave some suggestion questions, some other things like that. And that was a major unlock for everybody. But look, so I think the first thing, it's intimidating because like, yes, like I don't know where to start. And that's a very natural reaction. It's very different than anything you've dealt with before. It's not like a Google search. It's not like anything else where there's kind of finite where everyone's going to see just about the same results from it. You put the same query into the same thing 10 times, you're going to get 10 different answers. And like those are things that are a little bit unsettling for us. So I think all of those things lead to that.
You know, I've read online that people find AI very triggering for a number of different reasons. Many people find AI triggering because they feel like it's going to take away individualism or personality or character from art and writing. What's your response to that?
I think for all things like this, I always look to history. And while AI is going to be more impactful, I always look back to history. And if you went back 150 years, you would have basically had like Matthew Grady in New York taking photographs of the president and all that stuff because like nobody else knew how to use photography and camera technology and all this other kind of stuff. And now we all have it on our person and there are billions of people with cameras on them at all times. And does that mean that they're, and look, and the photos we take today are very AI. Like if you're using a Pixel or an iPhone, there is a ton of AI technology just in going into the photos that you're actually taking. It doesn't take away from the artist. It frankly enables the rest of us to kind of do more. But if you're an artist, if you're a talent, you could still do so much more effectively with it. There was a real interesting study a couple of years ago. It actually wasn't really a study. It was more of a YouTube clip. I'm sorry. But it was a great thing where they kind of had an expert in a field versus a novice generate images and so forth. And I think it was using Midjourney at the time. And then they independently had people look at them and rate them. And the artist did so much of a better job because they knew the language. They knew exactly what to do. They knew depth of field. They knew all this other kind of stuff versus somebody else who just said picture of dog. Well, no, an artist knows so much more. So like, these are tools. These are nothing more than tools for us to use and for us to do more with what we have. I mean, I consider myself a writer. I love to write on my own. I love the experience. I love the thought process of writing, but I use these tools to help me brainstorm, to help edit, to help do all of these things where they're really good. But ultimately, you as the artist are the one that's in control when using these.
I love that. I think you have a beautiful explanation that reduces so much of the fear around it. Because I've done art most of my life. And when it was first coming out, there's that initial wave of fear. And with our audience being younger people, you understand that you're going to have AI incorporated in your life and in your career over the next several decades. And it becomes incredibly important not only to learn the basics of AI, but how to use it to your personality type, your career field, and your wants and needs. Because you're particularly right, it is a tool, right? Just like any other tool in your toolbox, just like, you know, active listening is a tool, just like communication is a tool, it's very, very similar. How do you think it's going to impact the job market and the university study and even the grad school study of people that are coming up in this age of AI? Because it is very different.
Look, this is a hard question to answer. Because look, I think about a year and a half ago when I would meet with students and I would talk to them about this, I'd be like, don't worry. Like if you understand AI better than the employees of the companies of where you're going, whoops, sorry about that. You're going to actually be in better shape than you would have been otherwise. Today, I feel a little bit different on that. Like I haven't actually seen data, but I have a sneaking suspicion that internships are actually down from a lot of companies because they're frankly using these tools to do a little bit more replacement work for internships and things like that. So the kind of feedback that I give folks who are going to school, especially, you know, at business schools or things like that or whatever it might be, use these tools as best you can. You need to understand them. You need to be masters of them because, you know, whether or not your school is pro AI or anti AI, the world around you is going to be using them and using them for art, using them for business, using them for engineering, whatever it might be. You will be at a complete it would be the exact same as this was if it was 1999 and you're like, I'm not going to use the internet. Like, I don't believe in that. And I grew up at this time. Like, I'm old enough to have, like, remembered these stories, remembered these parallels and so forth.
The internet, oh no, it's going to destroy the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Or even just people like my father who are like, why would I ever use email? And like, he can't get off it now. Like, you know, I mean, it takes a while for people to get and to understand and to see the benefit and change habits and all that. But look, 5 years from now, we're all going to be using these tools all the time. But for folks in school, like I would say, getting back to where we started the conversation, if you have that bug, if you have at all that entrepreneurial drive, that is the one place I will say is where you have so much control over your future. Use schooling, use the networking in school, use the opportunity to play the student card. We could talk about that, but like, that's something like all the time, like, hey, I'm just a student. Can you help me with this? Like, people are so willing to do that. Play that, use that to your advantage, but start something. Because especially if you're starting something and you're using these AI tools, you're going to be able to, and I'm seeing this every single day, the businesses, the products, the services that you can create with less people, less money, less capital, and just like a $20 a month ChatGPT subscription, it's huge. So like, I hope that we're going to see more entrepreneurs actually coming out of college, being able to do more because they have these tools with them and be able to create things. And again, you don't have to make a $1 billion business, but if you make a business that's selling a product and making $100,000 a year, like, and it's just you, that ain't bad to start off. Like, and that could be done today.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it decreases barriers? Because a lot of entrepreneurship, right, you sometimes have to have upfront capital. That kind of starts to level that playing field out.
It absolutely does. Yes. And look, I will say another place that's panicking is the venture capital industry in many ways, because they are built on this model where you fund a company, it has two people, but they have to hire all these engineers and all this. And then it's based on hiring and hiring and growing. But if you just have an AI that can do that kind of stuff, and you just have one or two people working this business and all these AI agents working independently, you can really start to grow that business. And we're seeing that. A product like Midjourney, which I mentioned earlier, supposedly was in the tens of millions of dollars of revenue, if not hundreds. And I think there were 12 people working at the company or something like that. And again, not everyone's going to create that, but like, there's a lot of opportunity out there.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's taking advantage of it, right, versus being scared. I want to return to something you said. I'd never heard it phrased this way. I found it interesting. Student card. I love it. Give us a brief definition of your version of the student card.
So dirty secret. I'm 47 years old and I'm actually still at school right now. I don't have the university, but I'm also getting an MFA in writing, and I've been doing this for 4 years. I will finally graduate in 2025. And I actually play the student card as well. And what the student card is basically reaching out to people and say like, oh, hey, I'm a student, like, and I'm learning about this. Like, do you mind if I take 15%? It would really be or 15 minutes of your time would be super helpful, blah, blah, blah. And like, just all that. And look, people who, you know, and you could even say, hey, I would love, I'm sure somebody, you know, phrase this the right way, have Claude or ChatGPT help you, but something along the lines of, hey, I'm sure you had people early on your career help you out. Like, I would love to, you know, if you could return that favor or something, you know, don't guilt trip it too much, but find out the right language that works. Like, that stuff works all the time. Like, I think everybody in business in the world who has been there, who has been a student, has a soft spot for that. So that's what when I say play the student card, that's literally what I'm saying. Like, say, send it from your .edu address, reach out to people and just say, can you be very specific, be very cognizant of their time still, not to just say, hey, can you do this for me for the next week? But no, be very cognizant of that, but like, play that up, because people will respond to that.
And you're still doing that.
I still do that. I'm 47 years old. I was doing this because I'm actually writing a book, and it is about, it's about chemistry, and I'm not a chemist or anything like that, but it's a children's book about chemistry. I need to talk to some experts. And so I could have played the 47-year-old author card, or I could have played the student card. And I chose to play the student card for that. I'm like, hey, I'm working on this thing. And you know what? I get a much better response when I play the student card.
Of course you do. I wrote a children's book, Mike. So that's interesting that that's what you're doing.
Oh, but, wow.
Nice. You know, this is an example of, we spoke earlier about AI being a tool. Mike's student card is another tool that you can use at your disposal. And they don't have to be fancy, but it's something that you can continually practice. Because like Mike, I use that card as well quite a bit, and it got me great places.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look, I mean, it opens doors. It's not going to nail a job. It's not going to, but like, if you get 15 minutes with somebody, if you could get a quick Zoom call, if you could get even a response to an email, all those things matter. Actually, I'll give one great example. It was the very first class I took at, so I'm going to school at Johns Hopkins, getting an MFA in writing from them. Very first class, we were reading a book by this one author. And I don't know authors. His name is George Saunders, who's actually, it turns out, a very famous American author. I had no idea. And we're reading his book. I'm like, what the hell? I'm going to just reach out to him. And so like, I just started this whole conversation with him playing that student card as part of it. And my teacher was like, what? Like, I've never even spoken to George Saunders. I've been teaching him for years or whatever. And I'm like, I just threw it out there. And like, he was a very nice guy, very responsive and all that.
Right. And I think it's, you know, taking that initial step, which can be really tough. One thing you mentioned earlier in your initial introduction, if you will, is that you were head of innovation. I think that's what you said. I love innovation. Define what innovation means to you, because it means something different to all of us.
Brooke, so I will actually tell you this. I never defined innovation when I was at PayPal. And I'll explain why. And this will get to your question. It's so funny you said that, or you asked that. So I would meet with all new employees when they're coming into the company. I would kind of do a 30-minute innovation talk, and I would actually never define innovation. And I would tell them I wouldn't define innovation for them. The reason being, because we had people who were engineers and designers and lawyers and all these different backgrounds coming in there. And I always felt if we pigeonholed innovation, it would limit them. And they'd be like, well, I'm an attorney. I'm not that. I'm an accountant. I don't really do that or something. When in reality, I wanted them to interpret innovation for themselves. So we had legal teams do many different, very innovative things, but they were so different than what an engineer would do. So look, if you're really to hold my feet to the fire, I would say innovation is something that is innately human. Like, we all have it. We are all innovators, where we will find novel and unique solutions to real problems, often using things that have existed before in some new and unique way. That almost sounds like I read that out of a textbook. I swear to God, I just made it.
He didn't, guys. He definitely didn't. Well, the reason I asked that was because I'm a big believer in innovation. And the way that I like to define it for myself, at least, is that innovation is individual.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That's what I should have actually just been saying, innovation is individual. That would have been much better. You should take on that job, bro.
Hey, well, I'm a communicator for a living, so it would probably fit that I would be able to do a little soundbite like that.
That's solid.
If someone is wanting to learn how to be an innovator, maybe they're in university, grad school, in that young leadership age bracket, how do you suggest that they start leaning towards their innovative side, especially if they haven't encouraged it before?
What I would say is just start by finding something that bothers you in the world and trying to solve it. And it could be a huge problem. It could be a little problem. Probably better, frankly, if it's a little problem. Like, say, I don't know. I was actually just listening to something recently. It was talking about how snooze bars on alarm clocks are almost always set to 9 minutes. Like, 9 minute snooze is pretty much always the default. And there's some historical reasons that have just carried over. And I even think default on iOS and Android is 9 minutes and so forth. Like, I don't know. So say you don't like that. And what if you want to make an alarm clock that's all about snoozing and build an app for that? Well, you can do that. Just go out there and build stuff. And here's the reality. Like, it's probably not going to work. And that doesn't matter. Like, what matters is just the journey and the learnings that you're going to go through as part of this, because it is just going to make you so much stronger. Any innovator out there in the world, they failed a lot of times. You know, I mean, one just very tangible example I can give. So I have over 100 patents from my time when I was at PayPal, which was, you know, a lot of different patents and so forth. Those patents came from probably a couple thousand ideas that I had. So, I mean, like, and again, the patent and trademark office doesn't see the thousands of ideas. They just see the end result. There's always, with innovation and the innovation process, there's a lot of failure, a lot of things that don't go where you want to, but you just learn along the way. So that's what I would tell people, whether it's an app, whether it's a service, whether it's just even doing something in your community that you feel needs to be fixed or whatever, improved in some way, just go and do that and do that in your own way. And don't wait for somebody to tell you to do that. Just be proactive in that. Like, that is like part of the very first parts of the innovative journey. When you do these little things, they're going to start to get bigger and bigger over time.
Mm-hmm. And it's an opportunity to use those skills, that student card, the AI, and just gain mastery of those as you go through, so that when you have your next great idea, when you hit your home run, you actually know how to use the tools. That's important too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You set that foundation. That's right.
Yes, Mike, I have a tough question for you. If you were going to give three pieces of advice to university-age students, they can be related to innovation, AI, or something else, what would those three pieces of advice be?
Just embrace AI. Just use the tools. Just use the tools. Go out there and actually just get out there in the world and actually just use the tools as much as you possibly can. That, I think, is really important to just for a starting point on that. So one, use, embrace the tools, make them your default. Two, always follow a teacher or manager. So one thing I learned, like I always tried to get the best classes. The best classes don't matter. Like what really matters is the best teachers. Best example, so I was actually taking a macroeconomics class during the financial crisis when I was getting my MBA. Should have been the best class in the world. Like Lehman Brothers, all these things were literally happening around us. The teacher in that class was this kind of like, yeah, everything's going to be okay, but I want to stick to the book. And like, this was a golden opportunity for that teacher to just say, okay, I'm throwing this book out. Like the world seemingly is falling apart. Let's change how we're doing stuff. A great teacher would have done that. A mediocre teacher would have done that. A bad teacher doesn't. But this is true for your boss, for whatever. Follow the great people. It doesn't matter what they teach. Doesn't matter what company they're at. They will set you up for success, have you think different ways and so forth. And then finally, it's going to be okay. Like, honestly, all this stuff I will say with that, like, look, you're already in college. You've done all this work to get there. Just know it's going to be okay. Don't be too hard on yourself. Like, it is going to be okay in the end. You know, I like to always think about myself on my deathbed, looking back, like, what do I wish I would have done? And what do I wish I worried about or didn't worry about? And almost all things like that, when you start to put in perspective, like, none of this stuff matters. Love the people around you, spend time with them, and just know with all this, it's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. As we wrap up, Mike, I want to know, is there a quote, a mantra, something you live your life by?
Mantra that I live my life by? Gosh, I don't know. I guess there should be. I mean, I said all that stuff. There should be something like that.
He can use my innovation as individual mantra.
I mean, so when we were at PayPal, we did say that everyone can innovate. Like that was one mantra I did have all the time. And so, look, I think for everyone who is out there, like you have this. You just being part of this human species means that you are an innovator. And it really does out there. So yes, you have this in you, you know, don't sell yourself short.
Amazing. Okay. If somebody loves you, they want to learn more about you, where can they go to find more?
Probably LinkedIn is the best place, I would say, Brooke. I post a lot about AI on there. People can follow me. I'm never selling anything. It's all free. So if you want to learn about AI stuff, and also I do humor writing. So you could follow me on Blue Sky if you want to, where I do humor writing stuff. And I'm just Tedasco, my last name, on both of those.
Amazing, Mike. Thank you so much for sharing your time with me today. I've had an absolute blast with you.
I've had the same, Brooke. Now, anytime you want to have me back, if you ever would, I would love to come back and talk more.
Thank you for joining me on Campus Chronicles. I hope you found our discussion informative, inspiring, entertaining, and fun. We are always working hard to make sure that our episodes are the very best they can be, which means we need your help. If you liked what you heard, remember to hit the follow button on your favorite podcast platform and drop us a review. It helps us to connect with more students who are hungry for success. And remember, the journey never stops. Keep listening, keep learning, keep growing. See you next week for another amazing episode of Campus Chronicles.